Hypermanic Noise.
Welcome to another episode of the Hypermanic Noise podcast. I'm your host, Douglas Harvey, and this week I'm here with my good mate, Jez Watts. Jez is a sick comedian from Perth, Australia. He's supported Brian Posehn and Joe Mandy from the States, and he's fresh off a sold-out run at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. We spoke about Jez's background as a research scientist, the world of stand-up comedy, fuckhead promoters that rip off comedians, the state of pornography, and people who love inflatable animals. Yeah, as always, it was dark, dirty, and downright hilarious. I had a great time talking to Jez, and you're gonna fucking love him. Without any further ado, let's do this shit.
Podcast initiation sequence. Headphones. Check. Beer status. Cold and tasty. Check. Penis function. Hard, but unimpressive. Check. Podcast initiation complete. Warning. This episode may cause brain damage. Hypermanic noise.
Okay, I'm here with Jez Watts. How are you, man?
Yeah, fine.
That's good. You've got like a Hugh Hefner thing going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the times that I get to be in the house, like, why not wear a bathrobe?
Fair enough.
Because it's the most comfy way to live. I've taken it to the movies, and my girlfriend is not pleased.
But it's, I'm just disappointed.
It's super comfy.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed your dick's not out, to be fair.
I mean, we'll see how the podcast goes. Oh, well, good. May well eventuate.
Okay, well, I hope so. Well, speaking of... Speaking of dicks being out?
Okay, great.
Well, that's just an assumption I made from watching this, so let's see what you think of this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My name is Mark, I'm 20 years old, and I'm in a relationship with 15 inflatable animals.
That's too many animals to be in a relationship with.
He's greedy.
Like, 14 of those guys are not... feeling good about, like, the 15th, like, he's...
My inflatables are the funnest creatures I have to hang out with in my life. I'll eat with them.
Wait, you want my food? You got your own.
Watch TV together.
Be fine, I'll find a show you like.
I bathe my inflatables.
It's good, sure. Snap.
I do take my inflatables out swimming.
I feel like this guy is not actually into inflatable animals himself, right?
Yeah.
I feel like he sat down and he's like, I need an identity. Like, yeah. Who am I? Yeah. Like, I want people to know who I am. And yeah. He sat down in high school and he went, I'm going to be the inflatable animal guy.
Mark's addiction to inflatables began 6 years ago when he purchased a whale for his pool. Since then, the 20-year-old college student has added 14 animals to his inflatable family, and even prefers them over people.
I mean, that's fair enough. People are shitty.
The thing about inflatable pool toys I love is that they're soft, they're cuddly. The bigger they are, the better they are. Kind of means there's more to love.
I only like a real, like, live, yeah, athletic, like, inflatable animal myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
And it's really nice to have somebody to talk to.
No, Sammy, you don't get any of my soda, okay?
When I first found out about Mark's inflatables, I thought that's strange, or how can you be into something that's not really real?
Mark first turned to inflatables for love and affection when he was 14 years old.
My mother really wasn't there for me when I was a child.
Shock.
First time I held an inflatable whale, I actually started feeling all that love and compassion.
Because his mother was a fat bitch.
I love here, like, he back-sasses with them and shit, like, he argues with the animals.
Really?
They give him attitude.
Now he's so dependent on his inflatables, he can't be separated from them for more than a day.
When I'm at school, when I start missing them, and it's almost like if I'm going a little bit crazy. Hey, Johnny.
What's going on? Now.
Basically, give him a hug, give him a kiss. Spend, like, family time together.
Okay, we can talk more about you if we want.
I'd say every one of my inflatables has a different personality.
A little down dirty, don't you?
Some like different types of music, some don't. Some like to just be lazy and sleep all day. I would say they get along together pretty well.
15 of them do. 15 of them prefer to sit quietly all day.
I just love, my favorite bit of that is where he says, okay, he's there at the dinner table and he's got food laid out for them. And he goes, all right, we can talk more about you if you want. He's getting back sass.
Also, I feel like, you know, he's every single day he's gonna be like, why are you eating, baby? Like, yeah. What's wrong?
So fussy. I buy you all this nice food. How the fuck does that happen?
I mean, I do relate to some of it. Like, I mean,
what?
No, not the inflatable animals thing. But like, he's like, oh, I like my inflatable animals more than people, right? Oh. And I never really had pets. I had like a dog growing up, and my girlfriend's a veterinarian. And we made an agreement when we first got together. So I'm allergic to rabbits, really. I'm allergic to hay, right? We're still covered in hay. And so we made an agreement when I first got together, we moved in together, that we have one rabbit that lived outside in a hutch.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we had two rabbits that lived in the living room. So I would just be allergic to shit all day.
Yeah.
And now that we've moved in this new place where we are legally allowed to have two rabbits, and that's in the contract. Now, like, Nicole has gone a little bit like, oh, great, we're allowed to have these two rabbits that we used to have to hide. So now I have license, I just have carte blanche to get as many animals as I want. Okay. And then I guess we'll just call them all the two rabbits. So now we've got, like, a bird, there's geckos, there's a box of bugs that, like, the geckos eat. She just bought a horse. Like,
does the horse live here?
Not yet. Who fucking, like, it lives nearby. But I will say this, like, the animals, like, because I never really have had, like, rabbits before, and I love these two rabbits now. Like, I've been fooled into loving them.
Yeah.
I actually walked into a conversation, like, a Facebook conversation she was having with a friend of hers about 6 months, 8 months into the relationship, and I just happened to wander into her room, and I was just, like, rubbing her shoulders, and I happened to glance over at the screen, and the last message she sent was to, like, her best friend, and she was like, yeah, I think Jez has been fooled into loving the rabbits. Because it's all, like, been a plan.
Yeah.
And now I'm invested in them as, like, people, right? Like, they've got personality. And I like them a lot more than most people I know.
Fair enough.
I like Glenn Grimwood, who I assume at some point you'll talk to on this podcast, right? He's my best friend. I like him more than the rabbits.
But
like, no other people are better than the rabbits.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But if it was an inflatable rabbit, would you get hard?
Did I actually show him fucking the inflatable?
No.
I think it's platonic. I think, like, he loves them, but it's like a familial love. He said that to his family. He's not incest with the inflatable animals. You're putting that on it.
I am.
Okay?
Because that's what I want.
This is a healthy relationship with inflatable animal people.
Yeah, it's really healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. I vote yes.
You vote yes on inflatable love.
Yeah, exactly.
But I found it interesting. Most of them were sort of pool toys, and I think that there's other... I've seen, like, inflatable pandas, and at Halloween, like, inflatable witches. Does he get his freak on? You know, at Halloween, does he just go, all right, inflatable Jason Voorhees? Or, I don't know.
Well, it's the thing, it's weird when you fuck inflatable Jason Voorhees, because he never stops coming. Bam!
Yes! Alright, nice. But of all the weird things you can, like, there's women that are married to a bridge, and
yeah. What's the term for you know, people who is it animalia or something where it's like, first you need to have this one, like, I guess, like, mental deficiency where you imbue personalities to objects
that are inanimate.
Yeah, that, like, are inanimate objects. Then on top of that, you need to, like, want to fuck inanimate objects. So you have to have, like, two mental illnesses to get to the point where you're fucking something inanimate. Because one of them would just be like, oh, that's the couch, it's Barry. And, like, we, you know, he hangs out and stuff. And then the other one is like, I fuck Barry. I think he's going to have two levels.
But what about a fleshlight? An inanimate object?
Would you ever name your fleshlight, though? Because I feel like it would be so much more gross.
It's called Jez.
Well, now I feel scorned.
Yeah, good.
The real deal's right here, bro.
I know. Yeah. Well, you're too picky.
That's true. Plus, you don't want HPV.
No, I don't. Well, yeah. You can't get it twice, so I'm probably right.
Yeah, that is true. But yeah. I've booby-trapped my girlfriend's pussy.
I just don't... Like, where does the sexual... Like, if I look at the oven, I don't get turned on. If I look at a bridge, I don't get turned on. Like, what sort of defect is going on in there? I think it's the similar sort of shit to what causes pedophilia, but obviously it's a less harmful...
Ooh, I mean, I don't know.
No, I'm just talking that whatever that disconnect
kids
is...
Kids are gorgeous.
They are. Well, yeah, okay.
What's the thing? Yeah, I mean, when I first started jerking off, like, I didn't... I didn't know you're supposed to use your hand and stuff. And I was like, I think a lot of people do this. Like, I started out like fucking the bed.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we just sort of rubbing against it. And then eventually it's like, you were grinding that bed hard.
Yeah.
But I was never like attracted to the bed. I was just this bed is a vessel for my satisfaction.
Mm.
But I would, you know, be thinking about like women I saw in like computer advertisements or something.
Yeah, the Bras and Things catalog from Big W was my goldmine.
It's amazing, like, Mother's Day. How little you used to need.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't...
And then we'll become super depraved from the internet and just getting older and stuff and, like, and being familiar with things. But that being said, I sort of started out with tentacle rape, like, hentai stuff. Because Well, the local... So, at the time, the internet was still, like, 56K, right? Dial-up.
Yep.
And so, there was a local video store, like, around the corner from me. And they stocked like crazy fucking RX rated hentai anime stuff on like VHS.
Okay.
And I used to go and rent those. And the guy, the 16-year-old behind the counter or whatever, was like, oh yeah, this looks like a cartoon. This is a kid. So that makes sense. And so that was like porn I could get. But then I like started out getting like acclimated to sex on like tentacle rape monsters.
Okay.
And then I watched like real sex and I was like, fuck is this, like,
shit,
where's the tentacles, motherfucker. So it was a weird sort of about face. It's a transition into regular people sex
for me. I had to mine all of the movies that I'd found some sort of stimulus in. So
I had stuff like that as well.
True Lies, this scene where Jamie Lee Curtis
right.
is stripping for Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yep.
And,
oh, yeah. He's, like, in the dark and stuff. Yeah, he's, like, giving her instructions and shit.
Yeah. The other one, Ghostbusters 2.
Just Bill Murray in general? Like,
well, yeah, him. But
that guy's charismatic as fuck.
Of all people, Sigourney Weaver.
I thought it might be the receptionist.
Janine, yeah. She got freaky in the second one.
Yeah.
But Sigourney Weaver goes to bath the kid, and the slime comes out of the bath and tries to eat her and the kid.
Yeah.
And she's in this awful mum bra, and she's not hasn't got a rack on her anyway.
Yeah,
but for some reason,
this is the thing. It's like it's those moments I think when you're that young, because like you're just getting your hormones and stuff, right? So it's like anything could kind of set you off. There's this movie I think it was called, it might have been called Scanners. It was about this sort of it was like this sci-fi thing. Where the machines on this world had gone crazy.
Okay.
And like started hunting humans, and then they were like living like underground in bunkers and stuff.
Yeah.
And the machines like had kept getting like more and more advanced, and now they could like make machines that looked like humans, and they're like infiltrating the humans and stuff.
All right.
And there was like this whole thing of like, oh, are you a secret agent? Like, oh, they can make people that like don't know the machines and stuff. And there's this whole subplot, and right near the end of the movie, it turns out this sort of main love interest turns out to be one of the machines.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the evil, like, but she's like, oh, but I love you, human guy. You should get away. And then like a doppelganger of her like shows up who's like still evil. And there's a point where she's trying to sort of seduce the dude out of the ship. And mm-hmm. she just said this one line, like, you know, we can kiss, we can love, we can fuck. And just like the way she smiled. There was that like this 3-second loop of that VHS that I ruined by just watching. There was no titties. There was nothing other than just in her eyes is this glint of like, we can fuck.
Nice.
And I watched that so many times in my brother's room, because he was the only one that had a room in, he had a TV in his bedroom. And so I used to jerk off in my brother's room.
the other two that I remember was Cruel Intentions.
That had
some great moments.
Yeah.
And obviously...
Oh, that really did, didn't it? Yeah. That was the threesome, right?
Yeah, Sarah Michelle Gellar making out with the nerdy chick. There was just so much. And then American Pie, when that came out.
Yeah.
I went with the Shannon Elizabeth. Oh.
Yeah.
To this day, I reckon that could do it for me.
Wild Things was pretty good.
Yes. I've watched... Same thing. That pool scene.
Yeah.
The 15-second scene.
Yeah.
Play, rewind, play, rewind. Yeah.
What creeps we are.
Yes. But it does worry me, though. I sound like such an old fuddy-duddy. We had to work to get anything as far as sexual stimulus.
That's
true. And right
true,
now,
yeah.
on my phone, if I say, woman fucking a horse and a cat, search it, it'll come up.
Yeah, I mean, you can go in the next room and Nicole's doing that.
Yeah,
so.
I'm sure. But You know what I'm saying? Like, what?
Yeah, no, well, this is the thing.
It's scary.
No, but I think it's great. It is great. The only problem, I think, is, like, because we keep getting desensitized to, like, the advancing frontier of depravity, we keep having to go further to get the same, like, titillation. But I've spoken to people who've, like, taken a week off or taken, like, a month off, like, porn, and they're like, oh, you kind of reset, apparently.
Yeah.
But I have never done this. I choose not to. I really like my porn.
What? What's the point?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten to a point where I'm like, oh, fuck, the things I need to get harder are so crazy that I feel bad about myself.
No.
If I get to there, I'll take a week off. But, like, I'm all right. I just like watching... I mean, my main thing with porn is I like to watch a girl genuinely have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, for real be coming, for real be enjoying it. Yeah. And I can tell where they're acting.
Mm.
And as long as that's happening, whatever else is there is fine. I just really like girls coming.
So you're not into anal porn then?
Because there are occasionally... Every now... I'm not generally for that reason.
Yeah, I know.
Every now and then, there is someone who's genuinely having a good time.
I know exactly what you mean, but sometimes you look at the face and they're like, Oh, yeah!
I'm getting paid money!
Yeah, give it... Oh, that's great!
And give me that money! Give me that paycheck!
And it's basically as if, you know, a Nazi in Auschwitz asked them, are you having a good day? Yes, sir, I'm having a great day. Of course,
yeah.
There's nothing... I don't enjoy watching people suffer.
No, exactly. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, so you're okay as well, then.
Yeah,
well, neither one of us have gone too far.
No, I did have a teacher that got done for child porn.
Really?
Yeah, and his excuse was that he was looking for pictures of women's breasts and it got out of hand. Yeah. Have you ever had a picture of a kid come up by accident?
I'm gonna say no.
Yeah.
I think the answer is no, but like I was.
But even if it had, you would have got out of it. But
no,
it,
no,
it doesn't
sure.
fucking
yeah.
happen.
Yeah. Well, I had this thing I did years ago. I fell out with this dude over it. So this I don't think happens anymore. But like back in the day, because it took so long to find porn, sometimes you would just have a hard drive filled with porn, and you'd have friends who also had a hard drive filled with porn. So and you'd do a little swapsy.
My friend had one and they called it the archives.
Right.
And it was 300 gig of porn.
Wow, that's too much.
It is too much. Yeah.
But yeah, so I had how much I had and my friend had how much. And we got to talking and we were like, oh, we'll do a little swap. And like I met him when I was in the army, but he was like he seemed like a reasonable person. Like a lot of those people are fucked up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we swapped these hard drives, and then on the thing, first of all, mine was beautifully cataloged and indexed.
Yeah.
And his was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that. Like, oh, file names all over the place and no categorization. Yeah. How dare you?
You want to be able to find your scrap.
You want to find certain things at the same time. But he had stuff which was like, you know, like, so young and young enough to be illegal and all these kinds of things. And I looked at a couple and I was like, that girl looks like 14 or 12 or whatever. Plus the video is like, titled that, and so I like probably should never have brought it up with him, I guess, but like I afterwards was like, dude, what the fuck are you looking at, man? Like, you can't be jerking off to kids. And he was like, oh man, they're not really kids, it's just builders kids, they just find women that look like kids. And I was like, okay, but why are you jerking off to people because they look like kids? Like, that's and like after that, like, we just had a really tense relationship, and like we ended up falling out. Not necessarily over that, but I think it was that he knew that I knew and that I like wasn't into it. And it was such, you know, big sort of fetish thing for him that he was just like, oh, I can't have this person in my life. He knows too much about me and he's against it. But yeah, it was real. I've never swapped porn with anyone ever again. Like, I was like, I don't want to know.
That's so fucked.
Yeah, I felt really gross about it.
But like what you're talking about with the bed. A kid is as sexual as a letterbox or a can of Coke. I look at it and I'm like, there's a kid.
Yeah.
And then a dude walks past, there's a dude. And then a chick walks past, I'm like, there's a sexual being. You know, that's just the way my brain is programmed.
Yeah, I mean,
obviously, male is a sexual being, but
I get what you're saying.
It doesn't flick my bean.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the thing. Really, when you look at the history of human beings, like, it's actually only a recent development that we wait till everyone hits sexual maturity.
Exactly.
Which is really fucked up when you think about it. Because actually, for, like, more time of human history, like, older dudes, always older dudes, have been basically fucking kids until recently, when now, I mean, which is what I agree with, obviously, but society's programmed me for that. We just wait for everyone is kind of consenting and knows what's going on and is fully developed. And then we're like, okay, cool. Now you can do your fucking. But it's, yeah, so weird to think, like, even a few hundred years ago, like, really two young girls were in relationships, like, and pregnant to a 30-year-old guy.
Yeah.
And that was just the standard.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, this is just depressing now. The good old days. Yeah, the good old days. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have a younger girlfriend, but she is not that much younger.
Yeah. Well.
And also, she's a lot more mature than I am. Like, she hasn't thrown her life away on comedy.
She's thrown her life away for someone that's thrown their life away.
Yeah, yesterday she straight up just like looked at me real sad and she was like, hey, you know, I can't keep giving you money. I was like, baby, this is the worst it's ever going to get. And she went, yeah, you say that, but...
Yeah.
But it is genuinely the worst it's ever going to get. Like, I just came back from Edinburgh and like, that's the most expensive thing I'll do.
Yeah.
And every festival this next year will pay for itself and it'll all be fine. But it was like, this year is like this building year where I just threw huge amounts of money to tour in order to like be able to make more money and like sort of get set up in these cities. So when I come back, I can make actual cash.
Yeah. Money.
But it's like, fuck, that's a terrible investment to make when it's not even you. Like when it's, when it's your partner and you care about them, but it's like you work 40 hours a week or whatever as a doctor. Like,
yeah,
like in an intense environment, and then you're just like kind of throwing your money away.
Well, also, it's not like you're some fucking idiot that all you've ever done is work at KFC.
That's the thing. When we got together, we were both going to be doctors.
And what are your degrees in again?
So I've got 4 degrees. So I've got a bachelor's of biotechnology with a minor in applied statistics. Then I've got a bachelor's of molecular biology. Then I've got an honors a bachelor's with honors of biomedical science. And then I've got a master's in neuroscience.
Yeah.
And that was the thing, when we got together, I was doing my doctorate and I was like, yeah, you're going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a doctor. Woo!
So you trapped her basically.
Well, I genuinely believed I was going to be a doctor. But then it was almost literally the week that I did my first open mic. Like, we went, like, sort of hung out, like, on sort of a date.
Yeah.
And I went, listen, I'm going to be doing this, but I am still going to get my doctorate. And I thought I was. And that's why I got the master's, is I was, like, 2/3 of the way through the doctorate. And comedy just started taking up so much more time that I was like, I can't finish it. And so almost as a favor to my supervisor in the lab I was working with, I wrote up what I'd done as like a master's thesis and submitted that, but just so they didn't look like fucking idiots for taking on some idiot comedian, you know?
So you were working on research towards regenerating spinal cord damage.
That's true. Yes, that is correct.
So does that involves discs or the cause?
Spinal cord
itself.
Yeah. So my background was more to do with like genetics, right? So the angle I was taking, and it was, and like I to people in general, when they ask about it, normally like the eyes glaze over like 10 seconds into an explanation. So I have like a real super quick one, which is I'm trying to find a way to get people like with spinal cord injury to walk again.
Yeah.
And then everyone's happy with the explanation and we can all walk away. But what I was specifically trying to do was find this way to manipulate what's called RNA, which is like a regulatory part of the genetic framework.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Manipulate RNA to switch off these things that were sort of preventing plasticity in the central nervous system.
Okay.
And switch on other things which sort of encourage regeneration. Because there's like other vertebrates that are like sort of lower vertebrates, like fish and frogs and stuff like that. Who, to some extent, can regenerate central nervous system. So if you cut the spinal cord or the optic nerve, they can grow that shit back. And in humans, you can't. And basically, the way it worked was that as you get like more complicated as a vertebrate, there was this almost stepwise decrease in regeneration of the central nervous system. So we're like, okay, cool. We can like turn off this shit locally that is necessary for us to be complex, to grow, but just turn it off while someone's injured, you know, in that area, then it'll automatically regrow because those genetics are still there. Like those genes that do that are there. They're just getting switched off.
Okay.
Because they need to be switched off for us to be like super complicated.
Okay.
And so that's what we were trying to do. And I made some level of progress towards that, but it was, if it seemed like I was definitely going to fucking fix it, like I probably would have stuck with it.
Okay.
And like finished the doctorate, but I was like, this is probably going to be negative anyway. I'm probably going to end up being like, well, it kind of almost maybe works, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point I was like, well, I've got dick jokes to tell. I got to leave.
Yeah. Well, I've got a bit of an ulterior motive because
your back is fucked.
Yeah, my back's fucked.
I'm not going back.
Like, it would be better for me if your comedy career died in the ass and you went back to it and fixed my back. So it'd
be probably better for a lot of audience.
Give it up. I'm gonna have to talk. Yeah, I'm gonna have to come and talk to Nicole and say, look, I'm on your side here. Let's fucking get him back in the lab.
Yeah.
Do you miss it?
I always loved doing science. I love being in a lab. I love more researching stuff and like sort of like reading like papers on the sort of bleeding edge of stuff and that was sort of like a little bit different fields and then realizing how those findings could mash together into like new, like synthesizing information from sources.
Okay.
I always fucking loved doing that. And I quite liked lab work and I really liked, you know, when things worked out. When it did, it was frustrating as fuck. But science and comedy have always been two things I've really loved, like since I was very young. But comedy is more gratifying. Both of them pay shit, is the thing.
Yeah.
Both of them pay so bad.
They're terrible.
Science, you are on a wage, but science really does. Like, I ran into somebody in like wearing high vis on the street the other day, and he's a guy I used to study science with. And he was doing his honours and he maybe did his master's and he was a good scientist. And he was wearing high vis on the street as I walked by and I was like, oh, and he was like, hey, Jez, how you doing? And I was like, oh, shit, how you doing, man? So you're doing this now? Like, what happened with the science stuff? And he was just like, no money, competitive as fuck.
Yeah.
I just left. And I was like, so are you enjoying this work? He was like, yeah, I guess it's fine. I was like, money? And he was like, yeah, I'm getting paid 4 times as much as I was getting paid as a scientist. And this is the thing, I spent like 8 years in university. You spend so many years studying and really hard and you have to be smart, but you've also got to be dedicated and really work and gear your whole life around the same way with comedy.
And you're saddling yourself up with debt
and as well. Yeah, absolutely. Like I've got huge hex debt and stuff. Yeah. And really the end result of that is for most people who go into, particularly research, for most people who go into research, you leave after a few years,
mm-hmm.
you produce some stuff that the broader scientific community gets to use, but you now have a specialized degree. Like, what job can I walk into where I'm like, oh, so I've got a master's in neuroscience. Does that help me make coffee for people or what? Like, there's not really an application for these things.
If anything, it makes it worse. I mean, I worked in...
It's like you're overqualified.
Exactly.
Because you're not qualified for anything.
Yep.
But you've got these super high degrees and they're like, oh, okay, well...
Mm-hmm.
We can't pay you what you think you'd be worth or whatever. Or obviously you're looking for something else.
Well, I had the same problem. I worked in engineering for 7 years. Right. And then I was trying to get jobs at Subway and just anything like that.
Yeah.
And they would tell me, look, you're too good for this job.
Yeah. And I'd say, I need money.
I applied for this job. I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I find it ironic because science is notorious. Research is notorious for paying shit.
Yeah.
But applied science pays really well.
Well, this is the thing. If you do work in the sort of the private sector, you can have a good income, or a decent income at least. But so many people who get into science get into it for the same as comedy, for the passion that they have for it. Because if you just wanted to make money, you would do a 3-year business degree and be a businessman.
Exactly.
And you would get paid a bunch of money. And so loads of people get into research science, leave. And leave the field completely. And then there's probably, probably a third of them
mm-hmm.
maybe would go into the private sector. And they do like having money, but like it's often very repetitive work.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're like quality control at a food production company, it's not like, you didn't go to university and be like, oh, I cannot wait to inspect this assembly line every day.
Yeah. But it's ironic, right? Because like,
I wanted to do big things.
Yeah, well, guys that are doing research, chemistry, biology, physics, without the information they're coming up with, you wouldn't have the ability to do physiotherapy, psychology, or psychiatry.
But they never get rewarded for that.
No, but the others do.
Well, this is the thing. Society does.
Society, exactly.
Society treats research scientists as a resource.
Yeah.
They get recruited in and then used up and then spit out. So we as a civilization gain the benefit, but they just don't get rewarded. And that's just how it is.
And I think a lot of it is, it's out of sight, out of mind. You don't encounter research scientists in day-to-day life.
Everyone assumes that they get paid a lot of money. Yeah. That doesn't know. Same with the vets. Like, my girlfriend's a vet. Everyone assumes they get paid fuckloads of money.
Okay.
They get paid very poorly. And they learn all the same medicine as a doctor for humans.
And it's more varied.
Yeah, that's the thing. They have to learn all these different animals. And, like, dog can't tell you where it hurts and all that kind of stuff. But on top of that, like, they get treated like shit. Like, the clients who come in treat them like they are parasites who are trying to just suck money out. But it's just like, medicine's expensive, machines are expensive.
And people don't want to spend the money on their dog.
That's the other
when
thing.
They have health issues.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not going to bite. My dog has a propensity for bladder infections and things like that. And she had a big bladder stone. So it cost us a few thousand dollars to get it fixed. And now we have to feed her this food, which costs 4 or 5 times what normal dog food costs.
Right.
But people won't do that.
No, exactly.
And then it'll come to a point where they need another operation and they'll abuse the shit out of the vet.
Yeah.
Or they'll say, just put my dog down.
Exactly.
And the vet's like, what the fuck?
Sometimes there's like cheap operations you could do and they're like, ah, fuck it, you know? And not only that, the vet's like built a relationship with this animal over years of treating them.
Mm.
And generally vets prefer the animals over the humans as well.
Of course.
It's like, now this human fucking cum-faced person is like, nah, I don't really want to spend a few $100.
Can you kill my dog?
Yeah, just kill the dog for me, you know? And like, it's brutal. It's a brutal industry. And on top of that, they really don't get paid very well. But like, people just assume because there's money going somewhere, like they put it on the face, you know? So it's the same with science.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's money in drugs. We've heard about that. There's money in science. There's money in medicine. So therefore, if you're in that field in any degree, you've got all the money because you're the person I've met.
So
people who know research scientists obviously know how shitty it is. But anytime I mention to someone, like, I used to be in neuroscience, they're like, oh, fuck, you just said it. And it's just like, no, I did horrible grunt work in a laboratory and, like, worked for... Because I did, probably 3.5 years of full-time research, right? Like, cause I did a one-year honours degree and then, like, 2.5 on the master's thesis. I got paid, like, a bare living wage to do that. And I was in a good position. Like, I got more grant money than most people who were doing those things.
Okay.
And, most people get even less than that. But, everyone just assumes you're getting paid because it's hard. But it's like, there's loads of things that are hard that people don't get benefits for.
I find it funny, too, even about stand-up, because people say...
People assume you're getting paid every night.
Yeah, and we both supported Brian Posehn.
Yeah, sure.
And everyone, oh, fuck, man, that's awesome. Guy from America.
Yeah.
Did you get paid well? No, but we didn't.
I would have paid to put open for him.
I was
going to
say that
obviously. Exact
thing. I would have paid to do that because of the opportunity.
But absolutely.
When people say, how much do you get paid for a gig? And you say, what type of gig?
Yeah.
Well, all your gigs. Well, open mics, you get paid nothing.
Yeah.
Why? And the best analogy I've got from being in the music industry and all that is when you're in a band, you go into the jam room, you write your songs.
Right.
Get them solid, you edit them, you get it all sorted, and you've got a piece of music, a piece of art that you're going to present to people.
Yeah.
And they can either love it or hate it or be indifferent. But with comedy, you can sit at home and do all that. But unless you get up at an open mic, you never know if it works. And you can still... And also with comedy, the difference is... If Metallica gets up and plays Metallica songs, a percentage of the audience is going to love it, and a percentage of the audience isn't because that's not their thing.
Mm.
But with comedy, your job is to make the people laugh.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter whether they're fans of Bill Cosby, Jerry Seinfeld, Bill Burr, or Jim Jefferies.
Mm.
If you don't make them laugh, you failed.
Yeah.
And people don't get that.
Yeah.
And
a lot of open mic comics don't get that.
No.
But yeah, no, absolutely. It's your job to make people laugh. On top of that, like, you have to... some people write a little bit differently. Some people are good at writing off stage and then bring it to stage and it's pretty well done.
David Toffoli.
Oh, this is exactly what I was thinking
of.
He writes great jokes. But even he's, like, still tweaking that once he gets on stage. But my stuff particularly, like, if I haven't done it on stage 6, 10, 15 times, then it is... there are loads of things about it that change over that period of time. Yeah. And once I've been doing a bit or an idea or whatever for a few months, it's like, okay, well, now it is what I had in my head, which is interesting. I needed to have the back and forth interplay of me and the audience and different rooms in order to get to the idea I had. Whereas with a band, you can go to the studio and just work on that, and you can have the interplay of each other. But yeah, you can't get that in comedy.
No. And it's, I find it interesting.
Yeah, but on top of that, even once you've got good stuff, half the time you're not getting paid because promoters are pieces of shit or there's just not money in it. Like I've run, like a small production company. Like we run an open mic and we run shows at festivals and stuff. I've never been able to pay comics what I want, what I know they deserve.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the money. Like we've been running it for three and a half, like 4 years. We are still in debt to the company because we've paid out more than we've made.
Yeah, I get that.
But as it is, I'm like not paying anyone near what they deserve.
Well, I was.
And it's art is fucked.
I know. Yeah. And, but this is what shits me. I was involved in a show over here that did really well.
Oh, yeah.
Sold out many shows.
We don't need to say the name, but I know.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
And I took at least 70 payers to shows I was involved in at $25 a ticket.
Ooh,
13 sold out shows. I got paid $50. Two of those shows were at Southbound Festival, $50. Now, fuck you. Fuck you. They're not going to listen, but if you are, fuck you. You're like,
yeah.
50... that didn't even pay for a third of the parking I paid.
Yeah.
The fuel to get there. I don't drink. So they did put some drinks on.
Yeah.
But even that was fuck all.
Yeah.
And that is what shits me. And with that too, it got to a point where I was being involved in Side Splitter Comedy Festival, Roto Fest.
Sure.
And... look, I've got good sets and bad sets, and I'm not somebody that overstates their skill.
Right.
But for that show, being a show that involved rapping and comedy...
yeah.
It's pretty obvious what I'm talking about now.
I'm still confused.
I'll explain to you later. But I can rap. Most comics can't.
Yeah.
And I never had a bad show, and I killed it. And they didn't look after the people that got them there.
Right.
And that's what shits me. And for me, and there's this famine mentality of there's not enough success to go around.
Right.
When I got the support...
wait, what do you mean by there's not enough success to go around?
When I got the support for Brian Posehn.
Oh, yeah. People get fucking shitty about stuff. I personally don't subscribe to that way of thinking. Like, no. I feel like... like, some people, I think, see comedy specifically as, like, a zero-sum game where... if one person gets something, well, that's you didn't get it now because they got it.
That's I personally
feel like it's more accurate to look at it as like the rising tides like lift all boats, right? If you know somebody and they get something, or they write this really funny joke or whatever that's way funnier than what you do, it's like the fact that you know them means that their success will in some way bleed over to your success, whether it's just you get to meet a cool person and who's been doing it for 20 years because you're like, oh, wow, cool, man. And they're like, oh, come along and see the show. And then, like, you get to talk to that person and, like, gain their knowledge in that way.
Yeah.
Or, like, the fact is, like, if you don't be a cunt to people, that's really the big secret of it, but if you don't be a cunt to people, their success will, in some measure, they'll be able to help you out at some point. Like, if my friends get famous or they get just successful or they get some opportunity... at some point, there'll be a spot on a lineup that the promoter needs someone. They're like, oh, my friend Jez, why don't you use him?
Yeah, exactly.
And I always try to help out people when I can.
Yep.
And the people I'm closest with share that mentality. And I do not understand this thing of like, oh, I need to hold you down so I can step over you.
Exactly.
Because that's fucked. And we're in comedy. Like, the stakes are so low.
And it's not
a competition.
I don't know, it's not a competition either.
Yeah, no, that's the
and
thing.
And I hate comedy competitions for
that. I don't, because it sets everyone against each other. Yeah,
but wouldn't you want, so say...
but I want comedy to win. I want there to be the most funny things in the world at any one time. Mm. And so anytime someone gets something or someone does something, I'm like, great, more comedy.
Yeah, so say it's an alternate universe.
Yeah.
I become the next Jim Jefferies.
Right.
Would I want to tour with people I don't know or my friends that are funny?
Exactly. Yeah. I think it was in like Steve Martin's book, or he talked about it afterwards, that like, because he quit comedy when he was like on tour. I'm not like a huge Steve Martin fan necessarily, but he said that if he had known he could have brought his friends with him to open, he never would have quit.
Yeah.
It was that he would tour on his own. And now everybody does that. Every big dude brings people that they get along with that are still funny, but like they're friends. To tour with, because then you get to do it collaboratively.
Exactly.
I've spent a fair bit of time over the last couple of years like going to Melbourne and Sydney, and sometimes I've done that with my best friend Glenn, and sometimes I've done that alone, and it's fine when you're alone because there's still comics around, you can still talk. But when you go with your best friend, it's so much different. It's so cool. It's so fun. You write so much more. You get so much more excited about things. You have to go as like a unit into environments and be like, oh, you know, this guy and that guy, blah, blah, blah. It's just everything about it is what comedy should be.
That's what I miss about being in a band.
Right. The collaboration.
It's a brotherhood.
Of course.
And, you know, I've had my old bass player, Hi Alex, before one of our tours once, I had him by the throat over the top of a flight of stairs because we got into an argument.
Yeah.
And that was the first date of a tour. But we're still, he's still my brother. Like, right. I take a bullet for him.
Yeah.
And it's the thing I find too on this whole famine mentality thing is Kieran Lyons, right?
Right.
Great comedian. He's got his audience. He's got his style.
Yeah.
He does what he does. He's now on the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I don't look at that and think, fuck that guy. He's 17. He's got no life experience.
I mean, he's 20 now.
Oh.
He's a ripe old age of 20.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't look at that and think, fuck that young cunt.
No, it's awesome.
He lived in 20 years, I look at that and go, wow, if he can do that, that means I might be able to do that one day. That means, you know, it just shows you what's possible.
No, absolutely. And on top of that, like, Kieran is the sweetest guy you'll meet.
Yeah.
He helps me out all the time.
Exactly.
All the time, and he thinks nothing of it. And, like, we're just friends, and even it is weird to be friends with a 20-year-old. And also, because I don't necessarily, like, love the jokes he tells, like, they're very well written. I will always say that. He's great. He's great structurally with the stuff that he writes. And it's very tightly written. They're just not jokes for me, is the only thing.
Yeah, I get it.
But like, I love giving him shit about how, like, I don't love his comedy. But then I always expect him to do well. Because he's a good comic.
Yeah.
And I always tell people he's going to do well if they ask. Because he's a good comic.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter that I don't like exactly what he's talking about. It's just not for me. I'm just not in his demographic.
Mm.
And nor should I be. I'm 34. Mm. And he's a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Like, he's appealing to a whole group of people that I don't really have anything to say to. Like, I can get laughs out of him, but I can't necessarily relate to them on the same level, you know? Like, people who are a little bit older. Because I talk about being married. I talk about past with drugs. I talk about the things that affect me as a 34-year-old. It's like the 17-year-old kids who are his fan base will only laugh at the stuff that I do that's just dirty for them, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And that's fine. I'll do well in front of his crowd, but we're not competing for the same people. And even if we were, people could be fans of two different comics.
Yep.
Like,
I love Seinfeld and I love Jim Jefferies.
Everyone's a fan of loads of different comedians.
Yeah.
Like, you are never ever competing for somebody else's fan.
No.
You could share them quite easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
well, Louis C.K. for me, I've watched a lot of his stuff.
Right.
Does nothing for me.
I love the guy. I know that's common, but like,
but
I genuinely
should.
Do. Yeah.
He is exactly what I like, and I listen to his jokes. And I get that they're brilliant.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't tickle that bone in me.
Right.
And there's no... I can't fault anything he does.
Well, that's the thing. Comedy is the most subjective art form, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. That's actually what's beautiful about it, too. Is that because it's so subjective, when you do connect with someone, like when someone connects with your comedy, it's a much deeper connection, I think, than... For me, I'm biased. Obviously, you had a career in music.
Yeah.
I think it's like a deeper connection than music.
It is.
Because I think music is more universal and comedy is more individual.
Well, Rammstein.
Yeah. Lots I really like Rammstein.
Yeah. Do you know what they're saying?
Nah.
No. So there you go. They're
just fun.
Exactly. They're not telling you anything, are they?
Yeah.
And you can listen to Bach. There's no words. And it was written, whenever he was alive.
Yeah.
And it still carries now.
Oh, it's
but
beautiful
if I
story,
tell
yeah.
someone's jokes from 1980,
Even
if I stole Eddie Murphy's act.
Exactly.
He's got a... I've got Eddie Murphy...
I'll be comedian. Homophobic as fuck.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy, the comedian album, has a song called... a track called Faggots.
Yeah.
Can you imagine trying that today?
Well, like, I think it's a Patrice O'Neill quote that, like, comedy doesn't age like wine, ages like bread.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Oh, dude, this has been super fun. I want to play a game with you. This is called Cunty Questions. All right.
Yeah, all right.
So you're a smart guy.
I'm smarter than I am funny, I'll say that.
You're intelligent. I don't know about sensible. So, Matt's question.
Oh, okay. All right.
Train leaves Perth station at 3 p.m, travelling north. It's moving at 80 kilometres per hour, and it's running express to Butler station. What year did drummer Neil Peart join the rock band Rush?
1981? 1974. Oh, fuck. Well, I'll tell you what. I took a stab in the dark.
Yeah.
Also, my brother lives in Butler, and everyone would kill themselves on that train before it got there.
It would, yeah. Including Neil Peart from Rush. On a scale of 1 to 10, what's your favourite genre of pornography?
Coming.
On a scale of 1 to 10?
10 comes.
Okay. All right, perfect. You're getting the hang of this. Okay. So, you can have sex with Melania Trump anytime you want. All right? But you got to suck off Donald first.
Yeah.
You can have sex with Beyonce anytime you want.
Uh-huh.
But you've got to suck off Jay-Z first.
Uh-huh.
Or you can have sex with Susan Boyle anytime you want, and you don't have to suck anyone off.
Uh-huh.
What are you going with? I've got a gun to your head. You have to pick one. They're all good options.
I kind of want to... Can I just suck off Kanye?
Why?
I don't know, man. I feel like a guy that confident must have, like, some powerful cum. Like, I feel like he's... like, he believes in himself so much. And if I could, like take some of his cum... His jizz. His, like, charisma jizz.
His essence.
And his essence, you know? And then maybe I could, like, pull off what Kanye does. I don't want to fuck any of those people.
Are you going to pick one?
No, I guess... Melania Trump, I think, is a robot sent from fucking outer space. Otherwise, how could she have not killed herself by now?
Beyonce, but then you've got
to... I'm into Beyonce.
Well, but... What are these are your options?
Susan Boyle, because I recognize the name and I can't picture who it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I genuinely...
The X Factor old lady.
Alright, that sounds interesting.
She's a stunner.
Alright, cool.
Basically, you could go with... Gina Reinhart, sort of any of those...
Let's see.
That's her there.
Man, she must have some big old titties, though.
I don't know.
Alright, I'm gonna fuck her, because that seems like it would be interesting.
She's got a good voice. You could...
Alright.
You could get her to sing songs to you.
Alright.
Whatever you want. One more.
That's a terrible answer to that question.
Yeah. You picked none of the options and said you wanted to give Kanye a blowjob.
Yeah, I don't know. I just watched, what's his name? You know the guy who did the YouTube special, Bo Burnham. I just watched his, like, second special again. Yeah. And he did, like, a Kanye sort of, like, rant at the end of the thing. And I just had that in mind.
Okay.
But, like, I want to have, like, lights. Like, I'll suck off Kanye, but I want to have lights, like, huge, huge spotlights coming from all sides.
Yeah.
So, like, it's all, like, white light.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, as I blow him
on stage. You are fucked. All right, so one more. I've got a gun to your head. And you've got,
again?
Yeah, okay. I've got a lot of... this is... Pretend we're in America.
Okay.
You've got to... These are your options for survival. You've got to go down on Pauline Hanson every day for a year. And you have to make her come every single time.
That's probably salty.
No fingers either. I want it just all tongue work. No sex...
That fish and chip puss, I don't think is going to be good.
The grease, yeah. Some batter and crumbs down there. No sex or jerking off for a year.
No sex or jerking off for a year.
For a year. Or Katy Perry shits in your dinner every day for a year and you have to finish every meal.
I think... Yeah, I gotta take Katy Perry's shit,
Exactly, that's what I took. You get to watch her do it. And you can pick what angle...
I gotta be honest, I don't give a shit about Katy Perry. It's just, I'm not... gonna eat that fish of the day fucking vagina. And I'm also like, couldn't last a year. Yeah. If you have a gun and I'm gonna get shot day two.
You can put sauce on her shit, like barbecue sauce.
I mean, yeah, I'll choke it down. But yeah. That's not because I like Katy Perry. That's just
I don't either.
Those other two options are impossible.
Okay. That's good. All right, on that note, let's wrap this up. That was awesome, Jez. Thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Jez Watts, everybody.